We are really blessed in Wellfound that we're supported so well by this church, both financially and in prayer, and over many, many years. So today, that's why we are just grateful for your prayers, and there will be a few topics for prayer at the end, and for the opportunity really to give you an update of the work. But because we've been here many times, and we've shown you all the pictures of before and after, and we've spoken about toilets and wells and so on, we want to do something slightly different today. But I'm aware that there are some visitors here, so just very briefly, just to start everybody at the same level. So Wellfound, it's a local water and sanitation charity formed by this gentleman here, who'll be speaking to you later. He's just crouching down, Howard, in 2005. We work in two countries at the moment in West Africa, in Sierra Leone and Guinea-Bissau. And we work in partnership with very, very poor people there, some of the poorest in the world. And together, we bring them access to water. And we find that unlocks so much in terms of the transformation in their lives. But today, I really want to focus, as Andrew said, on some of the stories of the individuals concerned. So I'll be speaking both about some of the people we partner with in these very poor communities, and also about the staff in Wellfound itself. So that leads me to introduce two people at the back who snuck in because they've travelled a very long way to be with us today. So on my left, Kingsley is the CEO of Wellfound, will be known to quite a few of you, lives over in High Wycombe, based in our office in Greenford, but travels out to Africa very regularly. And with Kingsley, welcome Stephen. Yeah. Stephen has come all the way from Mile End, other side of London today, so there was a bit of a hold up on the train. So Stephen, you joined about 15 months ago now? So Stephen is the man that makes everything happen. So we all have these great ideas, and Stephen is the project administrator, monitoring and evaluation, keeping tabs on where all the money's going, and a really important role. So welcome, Stephen. Thanks for coming. So before I actually launch into individual stories, let me just give you what Barry might call the funny slides, or the funny photographs, because he's seen some of these. And it really gives you a flavour, hopefully, of our welcome in some of the villages where we work. So these were all taken on a visit that I made in January this year. And I visited villages where we'd been working for about a year. Now, we typically stay in a village for 3 years. But after the first year, they'll have water, they'll have the market garden for the first time, they'll have latrines, and they can already see that their lives have been changed. So we get a really... I mean, Andrew likes a party. These people like a party. So hopefully this is going to work if the sound is turned up. So bear in mind that the context for this, we'd landed on an island miles from anywhere. We'd walked about 2 miles down a sandy track in the heat of the day. And then this was our welcome in the village. Hey. Anyway, so I'd just landed on the plane about 12 hours beforehand, got out, and that was the welcome, so really good. Anyway, my role in this village was simply to stand there and look ceremonial. So they'd made me this little thing. Yeah, it is really. They'd made me this little thing to hold, and they all danced around me, and we got government officials with us. They made speeches, the various committees in the village made speeches, we made speeches. And they drum all the time, and it just makes you want to start dancing, really. So that was really good. That was the first village. That was a place called Etikunda. Next village, just around the coast. Slightly different way of showing their gratitude. And you can see I look slightly bemused at this.
What is it?
Well, it's actually two chickens. Very, very generous of them. That would have meant a lot to them. That would have been their food. And they gave it to us as a thank you. And what do you do with two chickens? I was just pressing them together. I didn't want to hold one in both hands. I was pressing them together to try and keep them still. This thing was going... Anyway, so Now, those of you that have travelled in hot climates will know that the when you have something like that, you have to keep it alive. There's no fridge to put your chicken pieces in, so you keep this thing alive. So those two poor chickens came on the boat with us. They came around the villages with us. And then they came on the boat back to the mainland with us, and they went off with somebody else. And I thought, that's the last I'm going to see of those chickens. Anyway, at the end of the week, the team there very kindly cooked me a meal. You can tell what it was, can't you? So that I know where those chickens went. And this is the final funny one. So this was the next village along, and they chose to show their gratitude by dressing me up.
Calm down, Linda. Calm down.
And anyway, just to show it's not photoshopped on, here we are. I managed to get it home with me. So I had a huge empty case.
Oh, thank you so much. Oh, lovely.
Anyway, three parties that we had in those three villages. So anyway, let me talk a bit about some of the stories of the people that are involved. And it was interesting, really, how both Andrew and BMS introduced the whole concept of harvest and the fact that we are commanded to share. I just want to add one thing onto that, because, of course, we're commanded to share what we have. But when I look at the stories of Jesus, the one thing that strikes me is that he did that with dignity and respect. And I think, for me, when I started with Wellfound, it was very easy to get into the rich colonial mindset that we're giving handouts and so on. And, of course, that is completely wrong. We could have been in the position of any of these people were it not for an accident of birth, where we've been born. And it's very important for a whole range of reasons, just human dignity, but also the fact that what we're trying to do is help them help themselves. So all about mindset as well, to actually work with people and treat them with dignity and respect. So hopefully that comes across in these first three stories. So this is a man called Bento, a young man. He's 25 years old. And he actually had the opportunity to go to school, which is quite unusual in that neck of the woods. But he was called back to help his family with farming, which is the sort of typical thing that people do around there, subsistence farming. And he used to supplement his income by foraging for cashew nuts. And many of you will know cashews just grow like weeds in that part of the world. And you go out into the bush and you harvest the cashew nuts. Very, very messy, because they're a double skin, and to get the nut out you have to get through the outer skin, and that's full of the horrible acidic sort of goo that gets everywhere, makes your hands black and so on. So next time you eat a cashew nut, bear in mind, first of all, somebody like that would probably get 0.01 of a pea in terms of money, but actually it's been a really painful job to harvest it. So that was his life. And when Wellfound work in a village, one of the things that we're very keen to do is train people in the different trades that they'll need. So things like construction, health, hygiene, gardening, and so on. And we actually help people to learn how to do those things. So Bento here was put forward to learn construction, basically how to mix concrete, pour concrete, and make concrete construction. So he started off working for Wellfound. That's a pit latrine he's standing next to that he's made, casting the top of that. But he's actually now got his own business. This was about 3 years ago when Wellfound trained him. He's now built about 15 houses for people in the area. He's built latrines in other villages, and he's actually making a living through that construction business that he's got. So just a tiny little story. And one of the things it illustrates for me is that we can help empower people, we can train them, as long as they have the right attitude. And that's not being derogatory, but one of the things we will look at when we go into a village is, are these people up for helping themselves? Mm-hmm. And if they are, we're delighted to help them. Mm-hmm. The next person then is a lady. Now, the best pitch we've got of her is a very low res, so it's the thing in the little frame there. That's a lady called Elisa, and she is the head of the women's committee in a village called Bisanaga. And the background there is the market garden in Bisanaga, and you can see how healthy that looks. That's where every time I go there, that's probably one of the healthiest ones. So she's 41. She's got seven children, And before Wellfound came along, her day was spent collecting water from miles away and bringing it back for the family. And we interviewed her. Now, she obviously speaks a different language to me, so this is translated by our staff. But I'll just read out what she told us. She said, "All of the women in the village were part of the market garden, and they appointed me as the president of the women's group. Since we started the market garden, a lot of things have changed. Now, every woman has a place at the market garden and has access to water, and we're earning something for our family. Now I can pay school fees for my children with the help of the market garden. We've never stopped planting, and our children's lives have improved. We have safe water in our houses and in the containers at the market garden for plants. Now Bissanaga is different. We have safe water, market garden and latrines. I'd like to give a big thanks to the people who helped us. May God bless you." So just two things in that. This is a very well organised market garden. It's something else that we look for and encourage. But you can probably see in the little picture, I mean, there's a lady asleep on the ground. I'm not quite sure what she's doing there, but behind that, there are loads and loads of containers of water. And that was their initiative, because they were having problems with the well, that it would run dry, because it wasn't quite deep enough. But they knew they had to water all the time to keep the plants alive. So under their own initiative, they got all of those containers, filled it with water when the well was working, and then poured it out as and when needed. And the other thing you probably noticed in what she said was she ended with, "May God bless you." So she's a Christian. Now, in Wellfound, we don't only work for Christians. We take the principle of the Good Samaritan. We don't favour people by their faith or their religion or their race. So typically we work either in an animist village or in a Christian village, very occasionally in one which is predominantly a Muslim village. But it is interesting as you go around and you do see kind of facing you what life is like if people don't believe in Jesus. So several times I've been in an animist village. An animist, by the way, is somebody who will believe there are spirits in the trees and in the land, and they worship those, and they'll pray to their ancestors and so on. And you'll come across little shrines, and that is quite stark when you see that. But this is a Christian village, as is this one. This is a village called Cali, which is also one of my favourite villages, mainly because of this man. He's called Oliveira. He is the village elder, and he is an elder also in a local church. There's a small town about 3 miles away, and he's an elder there. And every Sunday, i.e. now, he and 80% of the village will have walked to church, and they'll be in the church service. And it is interesting, when you go into a village like that, you do pick up that underlying it, there is a joy and there is a peace. I know we talk about that as the fruit of the Spirit. And it's interesting that you can, I think you can sense that. And one of the things you see here is that children are all gathered around him. Now, first of all, what he's showing them, you remember we had that big photographic exhibition here in the church that Jill Shaw, one of the other trustees, took a load of photographs. Well, she printed those and I took the ones of Cali back to the village. So he's holding the photos, possibly the first photos ever that they've seen of themselves. But the thing is, the children are gathered round, and you wouldn't necessarily always find that in a village. Sometimes the elder is quite aloof, certainly in a position of respect and power. But there, the children were very, very happy to be in his presence. So just three tiny little stories about people that we work with. And I want to go on now to the staff that we have. I'm going to show you another little video clip in a minute. So I'm first of all going to talk about the man who is the leader of Wellfound in Guinea-Bissau, a man called João. And João is a Christian. I'll say a few more words about that in a moment. When you drive with João, he has this particular love for Christian songs by a man called Chris Tomlin. Some of you will know Chris Tomlin. We sing some of his songs here. He's a Christian singer-songwriter. He's got them on his phone. He plugs it into the car stereo. And everywhere you go, you get Chris Tomlin, which is absolutely fine. So this little clip I'm going to show you, it just gives you a flavour of driving in Guinea-Bissau with João. And this is one of their main roads, by the way. I'm going to show you a bad road later on. This is just a few miles north of the capital, and this is a good road that we're driving down. every time he goes to a village, or the team go to a village, they're driving initially on roads like that, and then later on mud tracks. And as I say, I'll show you a picture of that a bit later on. So this is João in action, a man who is extremely good at engaging with the people that we work with in the villages. And the reason for that, I think, is that he was actually born and brought up in a similar village. So he has come from that sort of background. He knows what it's like to walk for water and so on. I find him a very, he's got a lot of integrity. It would be very easy for him to take us back to work in the area he comes from. But he doesn't do that because he doesn't want to be seen to use his position now in Wildfound to be favouring his family. You know, that's quite a big step for him to take. So in the lead up to giving this little talk this morning, we asked both João and Andrew in Sierra Leone really what their testimony was as Christians. And I just want to draw out a few things for you from what he said. So he said his elder sister was the first person in his family to be a Christian. I don't know what they were beforehand, but they weren't Christians. And apparently when she became a Christian, she was beaten, tortured and sent away from home as a teenager. Brought up in a pastor's home and eventually married another pastor. And João said he used to stay at her home to do his studies, and he also stayed at the home of some Brazilian missionaries, and through them was introduced to Christianity. He became a Christian in 1986. He was baptized in April 1994. Part of a worship team in his church, Howard's heard him sing and play the guitar. Now, we're hoping to get him here in April next year, and if so, we may have two guitars that day. Because apparently he sings Chris Tomlin all the time. President of Sunday School and also the leader of the adolescent groups. And he's now a member of a very large church in Bissau. That's one of the things that we're also seeing in the capital. There's some very big, lively churches springing up, and he's a member of one of those. We asked him what it's like being a Christian and working for Wellfound. Because Howard and I and Kingsley, we've often discussed this. Although we are a Christian charity, we don't go into a village with the express purpose of making people Christians. That's not what it's about at all. Howard will always say, if people ask us why you're here, we say God sent us, but we don't go out to try and evangelize. João says, there's no way you can hide your Christianity. You don't need to talk about it. People see you and recognize you as a Christian. As you go into the communities providing water, latrines and sanitation and talking, we always mention God if we're asked. It's hard to talk about these things in the villages without mentioning God's creation. So that's João's approach as he works around these villages. And we also asked, so what would you like us to pray for? And the first thing was he was delighted to think that a church in the UK is going to pray for him. He came up with a huge long list. So I'm only going to give you a few highlights. So he spoke about political instability. So Guinea-Bissau, we don't hear much about it in this country because there's never any huge battles or huge natural disasters. There are just people who are extremely poor. But he speaks a lot about the constant changes of government causing problems for development. In the upcoming presidential elections, there are 19 candidates. That gives you an idea just how volatile the place is. And he says God has to intervene to bring lasting peace in the country. There's no control over prices. Every time he goes back to Bissau, inflation has struck again or bit again, and prices are more. He asks for prayer for God's mercy. He says there's lots of hatred and no respect for the law. Now, one of the things, the place where Guinea-Bissau most touches us, unfortunately it doesn't really touch us in Sea Green, but it's the area on this side of the Atlantic where cocaine enters on its way to Europe. So in the islands offshore where Wellfound work, that is where the cocaine is landed from South America, and then eventually it makes its way into the streets of England and so on. And there's been a recent major drugs bust on the islands where we are working, and he asks for wisdom as to how to deal with that. And he says, amongst all of this context, pray for the remote villages of Guinea-Bissau, very difficult to access, and they just get no help from the government. The government has no money, And so there's no help for these people. That leads me on to the second person. This is a nurse who works for Warfan called Hurtimiza. She is a wonderful lady. Like Joao, very, very committed to help her fellow countrymen and women. So she's trained as a teacher and as a nurse, but she's chosen to work for Wellfound, and she spends her time working predominantly with the ladies, with the women. Also a Christian, baptised in March 1999, she told me. But I think the thing about Hurtimiza is she's a role model for young women in that area. When she goes around these villages, they can look at her. She's had a background like them, and she's managed to get to this position in life. So it just shows the young women in particular what can be done. And she is such a good judge of human nature. So let me just explain what she's doing here. So this was a village, and I explained we always like to work in partnership. And one of the things that means is that we expect the villagers to do their share of the work, particularly if there's digging work to do or concrete construction and so on. So in this particular village, we had, together we provided the clean water, the pump was in place and so on, and the ladies were starting to benefit from that. And the men, it was the men's job to dig the big pits for the latrines about 10 foot deep and put them over the top. And the men had got about halfway in that they'd dug these pits and then they'd lost interest and they'd stopped work. And wherever you went in the village, there were these 10 foot big traps, basically. So Hurtimiza, the way that she dealt with it was she spoke to the women, not the men. So the men were sitting off under another tree, kind of watching all this. And she said to them, I'm coming back in 1 week, and if the latrines aren't finished, I'm going to chain up your pump, and you won't have any fresh water. And the women immediately got the message as to, you know, the impact of that. Now, I don't know what they said to the men that night. But
got a good idea.
But anyway, Hurtimiza went back in a week and all the latrines had been finished.
You just need women in charge.
Indeed you do. Anyway, just in the final few minutes before Howard comes and speaks, I'll just go on to Sierra Leone now.
That's a brilliant strategy.
So I'm just going to show a few photos. I said the road that you saw Joao driving down was a good one. So this is the road in Sierra Leone, and our villages are where we work are either side of this. So first of all, it's a long way from the capital. So you drive for about 3 hours to get to a town called Moyamba, which is the district capital, and then you set off down this dirt track for several hours. And you come across things like this, and you wonder if the 4x4 you're in is going to get across that, or whether you'll get halfway and then it will just go... a bit further along, you come across things like that. Now, that picture was only taken a few weeks ago, so that thing is stuck, that little minibus. They've had rain there for weeks, like we've had over the last few days, so really torrential rain. Now, Kingsley and I are going here at the end of October, so there is one particular item for prayer, because we'll be going down this road. We'd rather like it to be dry. It's still going to be quite hard to get down because it'll be rutted, but ideally not wet and slippery as well. And a bit further on down this road, you come to this. And you just have to keep pushing through that. There is actually a track underneath that. And then at the very end of this road, so I went there here. These particular photographs are about 18 months old, and it was when we were just scouting in Sierra Leone to see where we were going to work. And we got to the very end of this road after this long drive, and you meet the Atlantic Ocean, and it seemed to me like we'd reached the end of the earth. This was about the most remote place I'd ever been to, and yet there were still people scratching out a living there. And I'm just going to divert very briefly from the story of Wellfound here to talk about Amazing Grace. Now, that was the song that Joao was... It was the Chris Tomlin version of Amazing Grace that Joao was playing in his car. So you probably all know the story of Amazing Grace. It was written by a man called John Newton. And before John Newton became a Christian and a vicar, he was a bit of a scoundrel, an unpleasant person, dishonorably discharged from the Navy and ended up working as a slave trader. And He was in Sierra Leone, and he fell foul of the slave trader, who imprisoned him and made him work as a slave to the slaves. And he wrote, "This was the lowest point of my life, that I was basically a slave to the other slaves." And he was imprisoned on an island called Plantain Island, which is that island there that you can see on the horizon. So next time that you sing Amazing Grace, you can either think of this long road leading to where John Newton was imprisoned, or you can think of João driving round in Guinea-Bissau listening to it. And just remember the workers are well found at that point. So finally then, this is our man in Sierra Leone. Now, I've not met him yet. Kingsley, you met him, well, you've met him many times. You recruited him earlier on this year. And I'll be meeting him. I'm looking forward to meeting him in a few weeks' time. So Andrew is also a Christian. He also works as a pastor of a church. I don't know if we'll get the chance to visit that church in the suburbs of Freetown. But he's had a long career, both as a civil engineer and also as a church pastor. We asked him the same question, what's it like being a Christian working for Wellfound? And he says, "I've been a Christian in the past, working for other charities like Action Against Hunger and Oxfam, and everybody knows what I stand for. And it's been a great experience working with people that are not of faith in these communities and getting them to understand your belief through the work." So a bit like João, not an out-and-out preacher and evangelist, but hoping to demonstrate through the work that he does that he's sharing the love of God. And finally then, we also asked him for topics for prayer. So we're asking for prayers for protection and wisdom. And he also says the road network is bad. Staff have been involved in accidents, so we're asking you to pray for their protection. So hopefully that's been a bit different, just to share some of the people and their testimonies and how they're working out their Christian faith in these very, very difficult conditions. But Howard?
I'm going to stand up here. I'm about the same height as David.
Oh, we can see you.
I think Wellfound should be really proud of what they've achieved out in Guinea-Bissau and Sierra Leone. Thank you, Kingsley, Stephen, doing a great job.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to make any excuses to going back to the start of Wellfound, because I think we should all do that now and again. We should all go back to our roots. And when we started, we were very blessed by this church. They gave us that rear room as an office. And I thought, wow, lighting, heating, water, internet, everything, all laid up. Wow, what a joy. And then Sean and I went out to Romania to drill for water. And we were not successful. We came back a little bit with our tails between our legs, I suppose, and people said, "Are you going to carry on? Are you going to give up?" And Sean's been there ever since, banging his gavel, auctioning off prizes, raising money for Wellfound. Thank you, Sean. And many of you came along and supported us. Sue and Steve. Sue with her painting, Steve with his carving. Opening their house. And there are two worlds out in Guinea-Bissau with Sue and Steve's name on. So many other people. Mike, always raising money for Wellfound. And only last week, or was it the week before, Mike, you gave me another check. Thank you for that. And it was Ian Woodley who started us with golf. He said, "Why don't we have a golf day?" And I said, "Well, why?" "To raise money for Wellfound." And we've been raising money ever since. And you remember Ernie? Ernie with his flowers and his pot plants, raising money for Wellfound. And Rachel's still carrying on the family tradition. I know I'm going to miss people out. Every time I got a problem, I'd go and talk to Barry. Barry had done a lot with charities. And he used to explain to me how charities work or didn't work. And that it's this support when you're feeling really low that you really need. And the big hitters that came and joined. United Rental Group, massive organisation. Not only rentals in the United Kingdom, but in America and Germany. And their chief executive and their directors, they come and play golf with us. And they have golf days every year to support us. And then when somebody like Jill, what a big hitter Jill is. Mary and I went out with Jill for about 8-9 days in Guinea-Bissau to photograph, because she wanted to do an exhibition. She'd done two before, one for Help for Heroes. And we went out with her. And we had this container in the docks with all our goods in, and we couldn't get it out. And Jill marches into the government offices and says to them, "You ought to be ashamed of yourselves. These people need this, World Found needs these goods to bring water to your people. You ought to be ashamed." And you go, "Whoa, just stand back." You know, you get an angry woman, "Stand back." And then Mary, teaching the women how they, about emancipation of women. I don't know how you talk to African women about the emancipation of women, but, and way back in Senegal, when she told them, "What are you going to do now? What are you going to do now? You used to walk for water, now you don't have to walk for water, you've got water. Why don't we grow vegetables? Why don't we have a market garden?" When she got them in a group and said, "If you want anything done, get a woman to do it," she said. Market garden. And that was the first market garden. Now look how many market gardens we've got. You saw the evidence of some of yourself. And then big hitters like Caritas Mondiale. Four or five guys in a gym, in the changing room, and say to me, how do we form a charity? Well, you get into the charity commission, download the forms and fill them in. But what do you want to raise a charity for? Well, we're going to raise money. Yeah, but what is the point of the charity? To raise money for WellFound? And you think, wow. And only last week they gave me a massive check. And there's a photo, Jewel taking photographs of standing there with the check. And various other people, too many to mention really. I immediately think of people like Felix Appleby, who's a lawyer in the city with a very large company, Bertram Bell Dyson. And if ever we've got a problem, we can go and talk to them. A legal problem. People like that. People that see what WellFound's doing, see the message of WellFound, the business plan of WellFound, which is not to give money. We don't give money. We will help you to achieve what we know you can achieve. And so that's what we do. I remember years ago, I met Kingsley, and he said, "I'm director of a large charity, and I think I can help you because I've got a doctorate in water." Wow, a doctorate in water. And we met every month, sandwich, glass of shandy, half a pint of shandy, whatever. And we'd talk about charities and how we could improve our charity, how we could make it larger. And then the local MP told me about a grant and invited me to put in an application for a grant. And we had 2 months in which to do it. And I looked at the documentation, 25 pages to listen to. I said, "No, there's no way I can do this." And Kingsley said, "Why don't I do it for you?" And he did it. And we got the grant. not a big grant, a small grant. But we knew that if we did this grant, and if we did it well, others would follow. Then when we got the grant, I said to Kingsley, why don't you come and join us? And he said, can you afford me? I said, no. He said, don't worry, we'll make it work. And we did. And we have done. I think that's what makes welfare. The people that want to come and join welfare. And of course, talking about big hitters, what about that? Yeah. What about that guy, David? Thank you, David. Yeah. You know, welfare's got a tremendous amount of work to do. I can remember I used to skipper a sail training boat, and a brigadier general came on board one day and he said, skipper, captain, may I talk to your crew? And I said, yes, certainly. And he said to them, what is your greatest joy in life? And if I ask you, I'll get many answers. Television, food, chocolate, sex. And I'll tell you what your greatest joy in life. Your greatest joy in life is your achievement through hard work. That is what your greatest joy in life. And that's the basis of welfare. Going into Africa, helping these people achieve. You can't just give them. They've got to achieve, and because they achieve, then they are proud of what they've achieved. They get their first harvest, and they're so proud. You saw them dancing in front of David. They're so proud. They achieved it. Yeah, we will bring the expertise, we'll bring the seeds, we'll bring them. As Mary did at the first one in Senegal all those years ago. But they achieve it. It's like that boy. We taught him how to make cement, how to mix and make cement. But now he's building houses. That's what it's got. We know, because you'd have to be stupid not to know, that those people, that their babies will be nurses, doctors, lawyers, politicians, Lord save me from politicians, even one was President of the United States. They will achieve and can achieve that. It's up to us to help them to achieve it. So, if you want to help welfare, come on board. We need you. Thank you very much.